All righty, thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett will be along a little bit later. He brings some stories from cranes that they have been writing about and covering. And one of the stories he talks about is the sort of the job hunting and hopping, I should say, that's going on. We think of it with millennials, but it's older people as well. Does that pay off? We'll talk to Frank about that. Also, check out your rent. The people will be along a little bit later from Apartment List, talking about where the rents are highest in Chicago and why they're going up, why they're low. We're going to start, though, on this Wednesday with Tom Gimbel, the CEO and founder of the LaSalle Network, who joins us usually on Fridays. It's nice to see you on a Wednesday.
Good to be here.
What do you think of that workers jump? I mean, you know, you must like that idea of workers going from job to job.
I'd rather place people in stable environments than unstable environments.
But the idea, I think the crux of the article, and we'll talk to Frank about it, but that employers now are changing what they offer to employees when it comes to training or education because they think the workers just aren't going to stay that long.
Well, there's merit to that, but there also there's that quote, right? We have to invest in our people because they won't leave, right? So it's a double. I think what it ends up coming, and Frank's actually one of the great guys in this town in journalism. He's a friend of mine too. And the real interesting point is it's okay to have two perspectives on it, right? So the company that wants to invest in training, terrific. The company that doesn't, terrific.
Then you got that.
Yeah, I think
you get what reap what you sow in a way, positive in both ways.
I know a lot of people that say, who are the employees, that go, I don't need to be trained. I don't want more. I want to go in, do my job.
Right.
I'm good at it. I'm 47 years old. Let me go home. I don't want to go away.
All right. So Tom is here, and we're going to talk about going away, I think, as a group. But first, how'd you spend your morning today, Tom?
We had our second quarter kickoff meeting for about 200 of our folks.
Let me describe that then. So, okay, we got 200 people in some sort of office setting, ties, maybe loosened because you're a little laid back. Yeah. You're up front with a PowerPoint presentation, cheering them on. Right? Is that how it went?
I'm usually in a suit. Today, I'm wearing sweatpants and a pullover.
Are those sweatpants or are those yoga pants?
Come
on.
Are you getting me as a metrosexual all of a sudden? We did. We rented out a hotel ballroom and we started out with sunrise yoga for everybody this morning. And so my belief is, I think it's everybody, but the focus over the past 10 years has been on the millennials, right? And it's more about the experience than it is anything else. And so to create an environment where people have an experience of doing a day like that.
Well, and what did I say to you? I said, you're not a CEO. You're an event planner.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
thanks for spreading that about me around the city.
Well, it's not a negative thing. I mean, you know, a couple weeks ago, you had the March Madness party.
Yep.
You had this sort of event. I mean,
I think
you do that a lot.
I do. My belief is I believe, again, other people disagree and they're right too. I believe you have to treat people with a path. And on that path, you have to have experiences. And that's what I want people to do. And some people have never done. I have 200 people. Some of them have never done yoga before.
Right.
Right? Some of them have never been to the hotel we were at before. Some of them were taking a whole group to Nashville, to your point, to celebrate a company trip. They've never been to Nashville before.
All right. What's this about, a company trip to Nashville?
So
is this like a sales quota thing?
No, it's not just for salespeople. It's for everybody. It's for our receptionists that we call office assistants, our accounting clerk, HR, marketing, and all of our revenue producers.
Everybody's going to Nashville.
Everybody goes. So if they were here for all 3 months of the fourth quarter, they qualify for the trip. And I build it into the company profits. If we accomplished X, we would go.
What percentage are going?
Everybody who started before, I think, October 15th. So out of 200 people, we have 160 people going. So there are 40 people since.
So you got 100% participation.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's one or two that have a sick kid or something like that aren't going.
You're
going
to fire them? You're going to get rid of them?
Well, for sure, they're fired. If you can't go to Nashville to celebrate, we don't want you.
Okay, so tell me about, are you going to go to the Grand Ole Opry?
No. Have you been to Nashville?
Yeah.
The Grand Ole Opry's not in downtown Nashville.
No, it's not. It's out of town.
I mean, it's out in the sticks.
But it's such a piece of America.
It is.
I mean, whether you like country music or not, I got a buddy of mine who's, you know, he wasn't a country music guy, but it's just such a slice of who we are as a country. It's a cool thing to
see. We're going right in downtown. We've rented out one of the bars. We've got singers coming in and doing the country music and doing that whole deal. And so we've got a couple field trips for people and options for them to do.
Okay, so I would imagine there are people listening saying, yeah, he must be making money hand over fist. He can afford to do this. So, and there are other companies that can't afford to take everyone to Nashville.
Right. Well, we didn't always do it.
It goes back to sunrise yoga. That doesn't cost anyone a lot. And I would imagine it's sort of the same transgression.
Yeah.
Progression.
Right. Thank you. We plenty of transgressions. This wouldn't be one of them.
No.
No. You're 100% right. Yeah. You do what you can afford to do when you can afford to do it. And the question is, if you don't do it, then you're not sharing. If you do do it, then you're making too much money. Everyone wants to be a judger. Right?
Yeah.
Can I give you something real quick? We won an award, self-acknowledging, right, as being a company that cares. And I put a post up on LinkedIn, and I wrote, I'm so proud of our millennials, because they get bashed all the time, for giving their time and money for causes. There were people that went up and posted and said they're only doing it for publicity. And I said, we feed sick kids at the hospital. We do poor people and help them. And you're criticizing the motive?
Yeah. And look, you should just read the texts, you know, that we all get here, too. It's just it's phenomenal.
There's nothing wrong with the world's greatest newspaper.
But I brought up your transgressions, not for that reason, but rather to say that it's the sort of thing that you can do it on scale to build a positive atmosphere in an office, no matter what your bottom line
is. It starts out, which, you know, is taboo in this health world we live in, right? But it starts out with a happy hour.
Yeah, right.
That's the same thing. Mine just happens to be in Nashville, and I'm taking 200 people there. It starts out as a happy hour, then it starts out as a Cubs game, and it grows, and hopefully your business grows, and you reward the people, and you share the celebration together.
And that's what it's all about, my friend. And that's what builds the community that keeps people there.
It's no fun to celebrate alone when you win as a team.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO and founder of LaSalle Network. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
When is the trip?
We leave Friday morning.
This Friday. Oh, so that's why you're on with me today, because you're not going to be.
Exactly right.
Well, have a great time.
Thanks. I'll see you next week, hopefully.
Next week. Okay. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. And, Frank Senna coming along from Crane Chicago Business a little bit later. And also, we will talk to Chris Salviati, a data analyst at Apartmentlist. I want to ask Chris, if it used to be that May was the big apartment month in Chicago, May and October, when you would be moving in. So we'll see if that's the case. If it is, people are in the hunt right now. But I want to go to Indiana during the time we have left in this first half hour, because I've just been fascinated by the story that's been unfolding there when it comes to their liquor laws. And frankly, I've been watching it for a year or so because, well, Caitlin Lang is on a phone line. She's a reporter for the Indianapolis Star. Caitlin, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Ah, you bet. Okay, so a couple of things, and I'll set it up this way, but I'll tell my story and then you can correct everything I have incorrect. But
Okay.
Trust me, it's easy. Indiana has a law that says that only liquor stores can sell cold beer. Okay, so if you're a gas station, and you think of it, I mean, gas stations now, oddly enough, are where a lot of people go to buy a six-pack or whatever. There was a story, I think, maybe a year or two ago, where there was, I want to say, a South Suburban gas station chain that was going to move into Northwest Indiana, and they ended up not doing it because they couldn't sell cold beer there. So there's this sort of friction. The gas station, convenience stores and things, they'd like to be able to sell you a cold six-pack. The liquor store industry is pretty powerful, apparently, in Indiana, and it's against the law. So with all of that as background, enters this gas station chain called Rickers, and they figure out a way around it. How'd I do so far, Caitlin?
That's absolutely correct. So a couple convenience stores throughout the state have already succeeded kind of in doing this, but it's a national or it's a statewide chain now, Rickers is. So they're drawing more attention. About 2 weeks ago, they received their restaurant liquor license because they have these little restaurants in their store or in their gas stations that sell Tex-Mex, burritos. And so they got a liquor license to deliver cold carryout beer. And naturally, lawmakers are not very happy about this because, like you said, there's such a history in the state of this convenience store versus liquor store lobbyists.
They're not really about the burritos, right? They don't really put a lot of effort in the quality of their burritos.
Well, it's hard to say. Lawmakers, I know the House Speaker, Brian Bosma, he mentioned that he would never take his wife to one of these places. I know the Senate leader mentioned that it's nowhere near a restaurant because it is just, you know, a little area in a gas station with tables that, yeah, you can purchase these burritos, but lawmakers are saying there's no way this qualifies as a restaurant.
Okay, and so so then is Rickers, are they doing it because not because they want to sell burritos, but because they want to figure out a way to sell booze? Is that what it's about?
They say they're trying to diversify their business, which is why they created these restaurants. Uh-huh. But I know for years they've been trying to sell cold beer, and all the convenience stores in Indiana have been fighting for this for years. So this kind of just seems like the latest attempt to be able to do that.
So if I go into a Target in Indiana, can I not buy cold beer?
No. So, yeah, we have some pretty restrictive laws in Indiana. There's that law, and then you can't sell alcohol on Sundays either in most cases.
All right. So Rickers has figured out a way around it. They got their liquor license. But Bosna and those guys, Bosma and others, who are they mad at? Are they mad at Rickers? Are they mad at the Liquor Association that gave them the license? Or where are they fueling their anger?
Yeah, they've mostly been angry at the Alcohol Tobacco Commission for issuing these. They're saying they've gone against the will of the General Assembly for years. So that's where things also get kind of interesting, because the governor is saying, of course, that the Alcohol Commission didn't break any rules. They followed the law, while key lawmakers are saying, oh, no, they definitely should not have issued these licenses.
So the governor's
not even really mad at the liquors.
The governor seems to be paving the way for loosening these restrictions a little bit, and the fellow members of his party in the legislature don't want to do it.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say if he's just, you know, supporting his alcohol commission or if that's actually what he wants.
Okay.
Because he hasn't really said if he supports, looser alcohol restrictions in the state.
What do the people of Indiana think? I mean, what's the mood?
I mean, generally right now, it seems like the only pushback on Rickers operating is from lawmakers and then the liquor stores.
Yeah, well, sure, the liquor stores.
Yeah, naturally.
It's kind of funny. I mean, you think of it, it's like the blacksmith fighting against the car in a way. I mean, you know, people can buy their liquor in so many different ways. This blacksmith or these liquor stores in Indiana have maintained sort of a hold on cold beer. It can't last forever. I mean, it's going to have to end one day, I would imagine.
You would think. But I think I know even in terms of the alcohol Sunday sales, I think we're one of 11 states left that still don't do that.
And you put it in perspective. There was a story about the vice president, a week or two ago, and alcohol, about how he won't go to an event without his wife if alcohol is served, which seems very strange to me. But it just shows that Indiana, as close as they are, a lot of people there think very differently, too.
Okay. Yes.
Have you tried one of the burritos yet?
No, I did not. They came by to the state house yesterday with their food truck to try to, incentivize lawmakers. It was funny. They were handing out free burritos, but the line was too long, actually, for me even to try to get one. But I've heard they're pretty good.
All right, Caitlin, so. I'm not your editor, but I'm putting you on assignment. I want you to go to a Rickers gas station. I want you to have a burrito, and then I want you to check back with us.
Okay, I'll let you guys know how it is.
Caitlin Lang is a reporter for the Indianapolis Star, the Statehouse reporter for the Evansville Courier as well. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is 12:36 on this Wednesday afternoon. Frank Sennett is an editor at Crane Chicago Business, and he joins us from time to time to talk about things that are going on at Crane's. He's on the phone line now. Frank, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. And just a correction, digital strategy guy.
Thank
not
you.
Making the editorial choice,
I know.
But
you know,
happy
what?
To be here.
You know when those words come out of your mouth and you know they're wrong? I just decided not to take them back.
I'd get in trouble if I didn't.
So. There's a Career Builder survey out that says 20% of us, 1 in 5, plans to change a job this year. Now, you and I are in media, and changing jobs isn't that unusual, but we're not usually doing it to step up. We're doing it to stay alive.
Sometimes it's not voluntary. That's right.
But what we're talking about here are people who are jumping job to job, and it's certainly more prevalent now than it's ever been in order to get ahead. I know Cranes did a survey, a sort of study on that. What did you find?
Yeah, so we took that data and we went out to an additional group, 650 men and women in careers in Chicago, in concert with the Chicago Network, the women's group. But as I say, men and women were surveyed. And the findings are that almost 2 out of 3 folks who were surveyed think that the only way to get ahead, really, in this world is to job hop. And, you know, stay place 3 years or so and jump to the next place to get a little promotion, get a little raise. So what we were always told not to do as we were coming up in a lot of industries seems to be the norm now.
Well, are they, are the people who believe that, are they right?
Well, it seems, you know, from what they're saying, at least anecdotally, that, you know, the only way to get the good promotion, the only way to get the good raise is to leave. I think, you know, we've seen that in our careers at various points probably. But, you know, only, you know, 15% or so had stayed in the same place for 10 years to even find out.
What strikes me about all of that is the result, and the result on the side of the employers, because, you know, a lot of bosses, they want to invest in their workers to keep them around, which makes a lot of sense. And if you are a worker who is invested in, you know, you might feel a sense of loyalty and feel a sense of worth and stay there. But as people jump from job to job, the bosses are putting a little less investment into training to keeping them around because they figure, why should I train someone to go work somewhere else?
Yeah, it can be kind of a vicious circle. And so I guess employers who, you know, get once bitten, twice shy. But if you do invest in the training and you do give people a clear career path advancement, you know, that's clear, then maybe they will stick around. But to your point, yeah, people are jumping every 3 years. How much training do you want to spend?
And is there any indication that the companies that invest in their workers tend to keep them around? I mean, I don't know about that research. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Have you seen anything like that?
Well, actually, I used to cover the industry of recruitment and retention 10 years ago or so, and the best practices always were that your retention would go higher if you, A, invested in the training, and B, gave people, you know, a clear path for career advancement. So I think those are the two keys. But, you know, that was like 10 years ago. Now, I think maybe a little more up for grabs.
Okay, so that's now. Maybe in the future, the kids who are 5 and 6 years old will go back to the old days of staying in one workplace for 30 years or 20 years. Maybe they won't, but I want to talk about those kids right now and go to Lincoln Park. Tell me about this company, Codeverse, and they're opening up this KidScript in Lincoln Park. What's KidScript?
Yeah, so the founder of Social Katie, the digital advertising firm, and a guy who was a big at Belly, the rewards card here in Chicago, they've teamed up to create this place in Lincoln Park where kids up to 12 years old can learn to code. It's $125 for these lessons, and I guess they come out and are able to steal the nuclear codes or something.
Now, how different would your life be, Frank, as a little Frankie at 4 years old? You had been learning the basic computer language and using all those punch cards. You know, the world could be a completely different place.
Yeah, those IBM cards
yeah.
I used to play with in my grandfather's basement.
Exactly.
I just thought they were cool, like, cards with little holes punched in them. So.
But, you know, so parents of young kids are desperate to overpay for things, you know, whether it's sports training or, you know, pottery at age 2 or whatever. You know, you want to give your kids every advantage. It seems like this might be a pretty good investment. And do you think they're going to find people to spend $125 an hour to teach Timmy to code?
Well, I don't think it's $125 an hour. I think it's $125 for these, you know, sessions where they learn a few things. And in Lincoln Park, yeah, I bet they will.
Yeah, the money's there, so why not? One more thing, then. Looking at home sales, Dennis Rodkin comes in from time to time, and I see he has a story about, you know, the fact that buyers are, this is the busy time, and there are a lot of homes under contract now. In fact, if I can just read his lead, more homes in the city under contract in recent weeks than in any time since the spring of 2011. Nice, I would imagine, on the job front there.
Yeah, and right now we've got 3,141 under contract, to give you a sense of that number, in the month ending March 25th. And the last time that happened was right before the housing crash.
I was going to say, right, that wasn't such a good precursor there. 2007 in the spring, things were about to get pretty bad.
Yeah, so, you know, hopefully it's not another bubble and we're just going to have some growth ahead.
And the downside is, right, that, I mean, as things get hot, there's still not a lot of inventory on the street. There still aren't a lot of homes or condos to choose from in a lot of parts of the city.
it's a seller's market right now in a lot of hot neighborhoods, like Old Irving on the north side. South Loop is really hot right now. But like in places like the South Loop, there's also a lot of new inventory that's going to be built. So I think this is a short-term issue. But right now, it is tight, and it's a seller's market.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked to before as well about the fact that a lot of downtown buildings are apartment buildings. They're moving away from condo in some cases and building rentals. But it seems as if you've got a condo on the market, it's not a bad time to sell it in the city.
No, I would put it on the market yesterday.
All right. So we'll do that. We'll come by. We'll do a walkthrough at your condo sometime next week, Frank.
Sounds good, Steve.
I hope you're not at Guaranteed Rate Field because you know the game's been canceled.
I am not. I'm actually hanging out downtown in a little bit of a noisy environment.
Well, I'm going to cut you loose so you can go enjoy the noise.
All right. I'll bring the phone next time, too.
Frank Sennett works at Crane Chicago Business, keeps us updated on that. I brought up rentals because in a few minutes we're going to be joined by Chris Valsalviati. He's a data analyst at Apartment List. And every month they do a study of apartments in the city, in the area, actually, how the rent compares, where the rents are high, where they're lower, and looking into the factors beyond all of that. So we'll talk to Chris about rents in Chicago. What do you think the highest rent area is in Chicago, in the Chicago area? We'll talk to Chris about that coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson, Kim Gordon, Allie Ellison as well. This is Steve Bertrand. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, do you own? Do you rent? I think the sort of ratios have changed in the past 10 years, and more people are renting. Chris Salviati is a data analyst for Apartment List, and he joins us on a phone line now. Chris, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I have to say, as soon as I said Chris there for the second time, I'm like, wait a minute. I don't know if it's a boy Chris or a girl Chris. It's a boy Chris, and I was okay with that. Tell me about Apartment List. I mean, because looking at the website a little bit, it looks like it's someone you keep track of the industry in a way. But if I'm a guy who wants to find an apartment, it looks like you kind of help me out as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Apartment List is a platform that tries to match up renters with apartments. And we have, you know, a really great platform there that kind of walks you through all your preferences, you know, what you're looking for in terms of budget. We have some really cool features in terms of mapping out commute times and things like that, different neighborhoods. So we really, you know, try to focus on the renter and gathering all that, you know, all the pertinent information and what you're looking for in a new apartment. And then we match you up with some great options.
Go ahead, Chris. I was just going to say, has the typical renter changed in the past 10 years? I mean, I know there were a lot of people who lost their homes 10 years ago and then went into the rental market. And it just seems to me that the whole idea of who rents and who buys has been upended in my lifetime.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely a long-term trend that we've seen going on, particularly exacerbated by the housing bubble collapse. And so, yeah, the homeownership rate right now nationally is at one of its lowest levels in decades. And so you're seeing, in terms of the profile of who's renting, younger people are renting much longer before they're able to build up a down payment for a home. And you're also seeing a lot of older people who maybe lost their homes or looking to downsize in retirement who are now turning to renting as well. So yeah, the renting as an option has definitely expanded quite a bit over the past 2 years.
Is it an income thing for the younger people, for millennials, that they don't want to rent until they've got the nut to pay? Or is it an attitude change that they're not necessarily as interested in home ownership as, you know, I might have been as a 20-something 30 years ago?
Yeah, I think what we see is that it's kind of a combination of the two. So for sure, millennials came up in sort of a difficult time, economically speaking. A lot of them graduated college during the recession with large amounts of student debt. So these are people who are, you know, it's taking them longer than it has taken past generations to kind of gain that financial stability to be in a place to be able to afford a home. And then on top of that, as you said, there are some attitude changes as well, with millennials kind of preferring generally speaking, compared to previous generations, to live in, you know, denser urban areas. Although when you look at a lot of the survey data, there is indication that millennials actually do value home ownership in a way that is pretty much in line with previous generations. So, you know, I think now more recently, a lot of these people are aging into that point of being able to, you know, move towards home ownership.
Well, you know, I used to think, or if I'll speak just for people. People used to think that people who rented are the ones who couldn't afford to buy a home. I've been in my home now for over 20 years. I couldn't afford to rent. I mean, you know, after refinancing and buying as low as we did 20 years ago, what I pay for a month now for mortgage and insurance and all of that stuff is on a par or actually less than what people are paying for apartments in a lot of neighborhoods in Chicago. I would imagine I'm typical in many ways that way.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, that can be true for people who have, you know, like you said, you've been in your home for a long time. And so I think that that is probably true of most people in your situation. When you're talking about, you know, younger people who are still getting established, the big thing is just saving up that money for the down payment. Right. You know, I think even in cases where it might be more affordable in the long run to own, it's really hard for
a hurdle they got to jump, right? They can't get there. All right, so what's it look like? And I saw that rents in Chicago were up a half a percentage point over the last month, 2.6% over the last year. Is that sort of typical of what's going on nationally, or how do we look that way?
Yeah, actually, compared to our national average, Chicago is actually tracking that pretty closely over the past year. So as you said, we're looking at 2.6% rent increase year over year in Chicago. The national average is 2.4%.
And what's the most expensive? What's the most expensive market in the Chicago market? The most expensive area?
The most expensive neighborhood within the city is River North.
Okay.
So you're looking there at almost $3,300 for a median price for a two-bedroom apartment.
How about in the suburbs?
Quite a bit. In the suburbs, it's looking like Evanston is the most expensive city in the larger metro area. And there you're looking at about $2,400 for a two-bedroom.
All right. Chris Salviati is a data analyst at Apartment List. Look, I'm glad to talk to you today. I hope we can do it again soon.
All right, great. Nice talking to you, Steve. Thanks.
You bet.